Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasir, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 98 with Jared Weimer.
One of the first things I heard in grad school was get used to B's instead of A's. and I had a knee-jerk reaction to that. But you know what? I'm pretty okay with high B's now and just solving really cool problems with cool people for a cool company. So you just got to decide what trade-offs you're willing to live with in your life and divide and conquer.
Well, as you'll see in this interview today, Jared is a man who does not like to stay idle. Not only is he working at Amazon right now, but he is also simultaneously pursuing a PhD. He talks about things that I think will resonate with a lot of veterans. First of all, Amazon is an incredible company. He talks about what it's like to work there, advice on how to get your foot in the door, and he talks about a specific program where veterans can apply to Amazon in a way, kind of cut the queue and get in front of people who understand their backgrounds and increase your chances of getting a job at Amazon. That's really cool. But he also talks about he's in global talent management, and so he's worked with a lot of different employees at veterans and seen what helps some get ahead and what helps others really grow in their career, and has some great advice for those of you who are already out of the military in whatever career, looking for just tips on how to remain competitive and how to keep on growing. I also love how he talks about the PhD process and just how to approach that for veterans, considering that as a form of higher education. And then his words of wisdom at the very end, I think, are just great advice for any veteran. At beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes, you'll have resources for everything we talk about here, as well as based on some feedback I got, I'm trying to type up a little bit more in the show notes. So if you want to skip over there, I've tried to just, as I'm interviewing, keep some notes. So it might not be grammatically correct, might not be spelt right, but you'll get a glimpse of what Jared's talking about and might help you zoom in on the areas that are most beneficial for you. As always, special thanks to our sponsor at audible.com. Audible books that you can listen to on the go. I actually just finished reading the biography on Jeff Bezos, who founded Amazon. It's called The Everything Store. I really liked it. It's a great book to do on audiobook, and you can listen to it for free as a Beyond the Uniform listener. Not only do you get a free ebook, but Beyond the Uniform gets a little bit of money to help us keep the production going. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Jared Weimer. Well, joining me today in Seattle, Washington is Jared Weimer. Jared, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks, Justin. I'm glad to be with you.
So for listeners, Jared is a program manager for global talent management at Amazon. He started out by enlisting in the Marine Corps, where he served for 8 years in logistics, supply chain management, and intelligence, while also pursuing and receiving an undergraduate degree and MBA. Jared transitioned from the Marines into a PhD program, working concurrently in finance and as a fellow for the Department of State. Since that time, Jared started his own consulting company, Weimer & Associates, and joined Amazon. Jared is currently 1 year away from obtaining his PhD. So just to start, Jared, anything to add or amend to that background?
I think that anyone who hears this who's been in grad school will understand that sometimes... you know, you and I both hope it's a year away from PhD, but that's a moving target some days.
That's awesome. Well, maybe to start out, if you were talking to a veteran and they're on, or let's say someone on active duty, and they said, "Hey, what exactly do you do?" How would you answer that?
Yeah, so I think that program management in general is really a lot of sourcing requirements and saying it's actually things very similar to what your average NCO, staff NCO in the military does, which is sort of being a go-between for people aligned with a certain program that could be anything for how you promote people in your organization. That could be a piece of software. That could be an event, something like event planning. But program management in general is aligning yourself with one of these things and bringing the users of the product or the event, the employees who are responsible for the product or the event, just all stakeholders together, deconflicting and making sure that it comes off without a hitch. For veterans who are no doubt looking for jobs, what talent management specifically is, you meet a lot of recruiters who want to bring you into an organization. What talent management is once you're in the door at that organization, talent management would be promotions, what it looks like to have your performance reviewed on an annual basis. If you're in the Marine Corps, that looks like a fitness report when you're promoted or when your boss changes or when you move to another unit. And these are some of the things that I would say if I was describing what I was doing.
And so for listeners who might be interested in either program management or talent management in particular, or even just working at Amazon, I'd love to hear your story. Like, take us through from leaving the military until now. What would you want listeners to know about how you got there?
I think that the primary thing is, build your network from the time that you enter the military. You know, you should always be networking, always be talking to your peers, the people who leave the military before you, and talking to folks in the community, at the organizations that you eventually want to work in, talk to people at the universities that you're thinking about applying to. And the reason that I say this is because, and many of my peers have also had this experience, I did not get my current job at Amazon through a traditional recruiting process. It was because I knew someone who knew another person, and I emailed my resume to the hiring manager and subverted the entire electronic sort of application process. And that's happened multiple occasions throughout the time that I left the military. I left the military and dropped into a finance job at the same time that I was going to school full time. And that was a similar situation. I knew a person who knew another person. And then when I went and completed a fellowship with the Department of State, exact same situation. One of my friends who I had met as a Marine worked with the Department of State, and they needed a fellow for about a year. And I just saw that come across my LinkedIn feed and sent out my resume. And all of a sudden I had that role. So I guess the one thing would be to continually talk to folks and take every moment you can to sort of think ahead of where you might want to go or just discover where it is that you could even possibly go. I think that one thing that veterans are organizations don't know how to work with veterans sometimes. And so that is a roadblock that is placed in the path of many veterans. And so it's up to us to sort of translate what it is that we can do for an organization. And only by reaching out to our peers, sort of only by reaching out to those organizations, those schools, can we then start to sort of learn the lingo for the civilian world. And then also that allows us to sort of decide how we are going to talk about what we did in the military. We all did different things. We all had different takeaways. Some folks chose to go to school. Some folks racked up a bunch of certifications, and they lived on different continents, and they led groups of people all around the world. And so it's all this big process of not only expanding your network and helping you transition smoothly, but also learning how to market yourself. And in a more philosophical sense, it's almost even sort of coming to terms with what the military meant to you and what you're going to take with you to this next phase of your life.
I think that's great. I mean, I think that storytelling aspect is so important, being able to explain in just easy to understand terms what you did in the military and helping a civilian hiring manager understand that in the exact lingo they need to. And I love that thought too of just approaching even time on active duty of, I know networking gets a bad connotation within the military, but using that time to find people on the other side doing something that you like and learning about that. Or I love that thought of like, hey, the people ahead of you, figure out where they go and keep tabs to see if they're happy and what they're liking about it, what they're disliking about it. And there's a lot of opportunities to expand that network even while on active duty.
There is. And I would say that that's we are all the center of our own universe, whether we like it or not. And I think that the military, it tends to attract people, attract folks who are very sure of themselves and tend to instinctively sort of know the right direction to go. And when you start to think about transitioning from the military and into a new area of life and a new chapter of life, sometimes we're not so sure and you need sort of something to benchmark yourself against. And so whether that's deciding what degree to get or what university to go to, or whether to get a certification versus an education, where you're going to move after you get out of the military. Are you going to move back home or are you going to move somewhere else? What career you want to pursue? These are all things where you can augment your self-awareness, which may be a little bit more limited in the civilian sector, by reaching out to those other people. And so you're totally right that networking does get it gets a really bad rap because a lot of people approach it transactionally. And I have found much more success in networking is rarely about me. It's more about the person that I'm talking to and what value I can add for them. And sometimes it's really difficult to identify that. But if you can take a look at networking as more of relationship building, and I know that may sound a little tongue-in-cheek, but relationship building, then it will usually a lot more success will find you in that area.
And I wanted to learn more about your experience at Amazon. I just finished reading the Jeff Bezos biography, The Everything Store, and just fascinating human being, but also even more compelling company in terms of the breadth of problems you're solving. And I'm sure every single person listening has interacted and transacted with Amazon. What was it that drew you to Amazon as a company initially?
Yeah, so part of it was right place, right time. And it was I was looking for a change, and there was an open slot, and so I moved into it. But anything that if I had to tell someone two or three things about Amazon, especially someone who was coming from the military, it's many of the positive things from the military. It's a lot of folks are coming early, stay late, and they insist on sort of the highest standards in all things. And I think that in the military, it's one of those things, it pays to be a winner is something you always hear. And it pays to be right and it pays to make things better. I think that the constant, in the military, there's a certain amount of red tape. I think that in at Amazon specifically, you're encouraged to run fast, be right a lot, and people will take risks on you. And I know that one of the top pieces of feedback that I hear, even from my own peers who I used to work with as Marines, if for instance, they didn't spend the time while on active duty to obtain an education, they may get out and people may throw jobs at them that don't take advantage of their full breadth of skill and jobs that may not help them support their families. Amazon is the opposite of that. Amazon understands sort of where you've been, where it is that you want to go. And if you can prove yourself once or twice, we'll make really big bets on you, backed by finances, backed by other people to add to your team. And Amazon is also the shining example of the importance of narrative, because every single thing that we do here is based on and rooted in an overarching sort of vision document. And so nothing gets done without a vision document. I think that everyone in their own life, honestly, should have a vision document because it'll help you sort of synthesize where you want to go, why you want to go there. And that is something that Amazon has baked into literally everything they do operationally. And so some of the really good things from the military, minus 4 a.m. BT, things like that.
That's a great explanation. I love that. I think that's like a very tangible sense of what veterans might enjoy at Amazon. Do you have any advice for, and I know this is a kind of a poor question because I know it's such an incredibly diverse number of roles and positions and places within Amazon. But I'm wondering in general if you have advice for a veteran thinking of applying to Amazon, any advice on the interview process or anything to think about that might give them an edge in getting a job there?
Yeah, so I think that a lot of people are familiar with different interviewing methods. You know, I'm hoping that the transition workshops from the military have improved in the last 2 or 2.5 years. But one thing they'll talk about in those sessions is something like the STAR interviewing method, where you have to make sure and have various examples based on your experience and what was the situation and what did you do and who did you do it with and what was the outcome. So those are definitely behavioral interviewing. That's something you definitely sort of want to have under your belt and know what you're doing. The second thing would be people. I think that people joke around in their organizations about cultural artifacts. In the military, I think that people are very serious about traditions and rules and regulations. Amazon is similarly serious and not at all tongue in cheek about what they call their leadership principles. And all this information is easily obtainable online as well. But every interview is based around those leadership principles. So as far as interviewing is concerned, as long as you can answer a question behaviorally and adhering to those leadership principles, you'll set yourself up and ahead of the rest. And so what that actually looks like in practice is taking whatever resume or your LinkedIn and being able to talk about each experience in 2 or 3 different ways. In sort of that STAR format. And then also, I understand a lot of people shy away from sort of the name dropping or the tongue-in-cheek use of leadership principles, but no kidding, take those 14 leadership principles and integrate them into your answers. And people love that. There's an assumption in there that you got an interview. There, Amazon had recently, Jeff Bezos was at the White House and signed up for Amazon hiring 25, 50,000 more veterans. And so there's a whole new veterans initiative at Amazon. So what I would say is you can apply online at Amazon.jobs, and there is a minimal likelihood that a resume will make it through sort of a resume search engine and then actually find it to a recruiter's desk. What I can do is I can share with you, Justin, and then maybe you can put it up a link to basically where you can send your resume to a pool of military recruiters, who most of whom are former military and they know exactly what the experience on your resume represents. And for instance, one of them, he is a former Marine NCO, and he leads a team of just more than 10 recruiters. And they are all, with the exception of one, former military or military spouses. And so if one of the challenges for a particular veteran was translating their skills into civilian speak, that is something where there will be less of a challenge there because someone is reading their resume who actually understands. So the two things would be knowing how to interview against leadership principles and shooting your resume to sort of this overall military recruiting inbox versus just through the website, because that'll severely up your chances of even getting a call back.
That's great. I will for listeners, I'll add that link at beyondtheuniform.io in the show notes under resources. I'll have that link there, and I think that's so great to I think it's great that Amazon's investing in the hiring of veterans, and I think it's great that they have that separate process to allow vets to kind of not jump the queue, but have their own application process and give them a little bit of an edge in that way. One question I have that, this is also very broad, and so, but I'm thinking of the veterans who are listening who might be a few years out of the military and might be, in different careers. And I'm realizing you have this wealth of knowledge working in this role of talent management. And I'm just wondering if there's any advice you have for them, like any themes that you see with employees at Amazon, be it veteran or civilian, just different things that have helped them improve in their professional career or help them progress faster.
Yeah, so I think that sort of one of the biggest things. So I'll answer it sort of by answering what can you do to avoid leaving or failing, because sometimes that's the best you can do. One of the things that you'll hear if you talk to really anyone who has worked at Amazon is that there's you move at the speed of Amazon, and which tends to lead to varying levels of ambiguity. And so the number one, I would say, best thing that anyone can do, and I had a really hard time doing this when I first showed up, is similar to if you have a space where you can sort of retreat to in your life to recenter yourself, in whatever organization you're in whatever role you're in. Being able to create a framework that reduces the ambiguity that you're feeling will directly contribute not only to your ability to be sort of happy and content in your role, but also your ability to move forward amid the ambiguity. And I think that especially coming out of the military, when you're sort of your charge is to take whatever is handed to you, whether that be two things, five things, 100 things, and you are expected to, move all of these forward at the same time. And there's a decent amount of structure involved. Conversely, in sort of this Amazon environment, and I'm actually sure it's this way in other organizations I've been in. If you can create a framework, and when I say create a framework, what this actually looks like is you talking with your manager and your manager's manager, and your peers and your direct reports, and everyone who touches a particular project or product or any business outcome that you are responsible for, and involving all those people and creating a framework within which you can navigate that ambiguity, that's going to serve you immensely above and beyond your peers. And sometimes that looks like you signed up for 5 or 10 projects, and sometimes that actually looks like only two of them moving forward. The framework may be that you decide along with your peers to deprioritize something, similar to when you have a complicated sort of family experience in life, when you work with other people in your life to prioritize one thing over another thing and work through things together. It isn't really much different in the corporate space. And so if I had one piece of advice for anyone, it would be finding ways to reduce that overall ambiguity in whatever it is, whatever their current pursuit is.
Could you give a couple examples? So I love that thought of that. Like, what have you seen people do well that is like an example of minimizing that ambiguity or having some sort of safe haven in amidst that kind of chaos?
Yeah, so I think that there are a couple of contributors to that ambiguity, and I think that we've all had probably more than one boss at a time, and it's always really interesting because there's usually one boss who controls your promotion and your pay raises and all this other stuff, and then there's another boss who you might actually owe a potential deliverable to. And quite often, especially if these folks are a little bit more senior, then not only can you sort of get caught in the crossfire because both of these folks have different expectations, but also then you can be the person delivering, attempting to deliver what turns out to be an infeasible, amount of work to more than one person. And so it is as simple as, and I guess when I say simple, it doesn't, in reality, it's not that simple. It may be three or four conversations where everyone is brought together and all of the asks are laid out on a table and people decide which ones drop off the plate. One way that I do this in particular is that any project that I'm associated with, I, whether there are one or five stakeholders, I have, you know, sort of project management 101. There's a timeline which with all the major milestones and a timeline with all the major deliverables for every single person involved in the project. And 5 minutes of every conversation around any milestone is regrounding everyone involved or everyone at the table, regrounding everyone in this is where we're at in the process, this is who owes what to whom, and this is when they'll get it. And quite often then, someone around the table will help you out and they'll understand that if a deliverable in this particular part of the timeline doesn't move, then it will impact them getting their deliverable. Then you're sort of, by bringing it out in the front in every meeting, in every conversation, then not only do you build trust with people because you are vocalizing and not just assuming that things will get done, you are prioritizing and you're showing people what it is that you value more than other things. You're co-opting them and sort of moving towards an outcome with them. And because of this, then they are more prone to then help you move towards that same end, because in the end, your success is most often combined with their success, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And tell me more about the PhD process. Like, how are you able to do this while still working full time?
Poorly. I think that one other person who I've been in this program, in the PhD program with, has worked full time, and it's not something that's recommended, not at all. I think that a very helpful exercise that we engaged in during the first week of our PhD program was we went and we made a list. And we made a list of the people in our lives who we could count on for honest feedback. And we made a list of the people in our lives who we could always count on to sort of hear us out and empathize and be there, be our sounding board and be sympathetic to us. And we made a list of people who should be our career board of advisors, you know, people who would help us network to the next level. And then we created a list of people who might be just in general our social support. So throughout the entirety of the PhD program, I always viewed a part-time or a full-time job as another way to, first of all, continue to network. Second of all, continue to sort of have a different social and professional circle outside of a PhD program. I think you can probably relate to, you know, sometimes when your life is just in one bucket, you start to get a little bit of tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't, when you reach sort of a headway in one area of your life, or you reach a challenging point, sometimes it's best to sort of set that part aside a little bit and then come over to another part of your life and put in a little bit more effort there. And so for me, it was always a positive to work on top of a PhD program because it added a lot of variety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have two brothers who did a similar thing, and thankfully they have both graduated with their PhDs, but they worked full time the entire time. And I think that a decision that we all made and that everyone has to make is, you know, do you want to remain that 4.0 or that 3.9 student? Or do you want to sacrifice a little bit in grades and sacrifice a little bit in research and potentially have some really awesome professional experiences, which will result in you already having a job when you graduate, having a loaded resume, having exponentially more business contacts, and also having a place to apply what you're learning as you learn it, and have sort of bounce what's in the book up against what how that actually lands in the real world. And those were invaluable trade-offs for me.
Yeah, I think I often think of my MBA experience and how much more I would have extracted value from classes if I was applying it to a business I was starting or a job I had on the side. And I imagine the same is true. It sounds like from what you're saying that being able to have the real world application, I bet it just makes the problems you're looking at in your PhD process and the things that you're learning, it makes it much more three-dimensional, much more tangible, and allows you to take it less as a strictly theoretical exercise and have some sort of real world component. And I think that sounds awesome.
That is spot on, and admitted, and I'll fully admit that, you know, being involved in, you know, in a really big company and moving quickly all the time and having all this experience, you know, if you don't watch it, then conversely, you can almost value the applied experience more than the educational experience. And I definitely wouldn't want anyone to go that far, where you start to sort of minimize the benefit that you're getting from your education. So that's something that I noticed myself doing at times. And so that would definitely be sort of a limit where I would just encourage people, if you see yourself doing that and you're in a school setting, it's great to have experience, but when you start to sort of lose that focus on the school and that motivation, then that for me was a point where I knew I needed to step back a little bit and refocus.
For veterans who are thinking of pursuing a PhD, is there any advice you have or anything you wish you would have known when you first started this process?
So I'm sure that you're familiar with Service to School.
I love really it as an organization.
Name.
Yep.
Yeah. They were in their nascent stages when I was when I was looking into grad schools, and so I would definitely say, like, no matter who you are, no matter where you're going, no matter what you're trying to do, for sure reach out to them. I help a couple of people a month through that organization, basically just like rewriting statements of purpose for grad school. I think that the one thing overall that I would say about grad school is it's going to seem like a lot. It's going to seem like a lot, and there are going to be a lot of questions. And just like in other areas of life, I think that sometimes we tend to think that certain folks, because of their status or because we're not familiar with what they do, sometimes we tend to think that we won't have anything to talk to them about. But I found out so much by calling the universities that I was thinking about applying to and calling the potential professors who I would work with. And those are ways that is essentially the same as getting the inside track to a job. Is calling those people and actually understanding what it is that they're doing, what their goals are. You know, quite often the program that I ended up getting into, I don't think that the website had been updated in 7 or 8 years. And so a lot of the information that I found out about the program was by reaching out to professors directly. And there's specifically for grad school, there's a great website, thegradcafe.com. And it's essentially like Reddit or some other social website where posts are voted up or down based on utility or value. And a lot of folks will provide you the inside scoop on their professor or the program or the university. And there's a lot of underground information there that I have found valuable, and a lot of other people have found valuable. For grad school in general, I think that it's really important to look beyond your immediate goals. And the reason that I say this is because I got a graduate degree prior to leaving the military. But if that had been sort of my terminal goal, if I was going to get an MBA, and then that was going to be the end of my education, And that was going to be sort of my last time to sort of take time and learn and be in the literature and learn from really great professors and have really great applied experiences, then I would have chosen a different school and I would have chosen a different program. But because I looked a couple of life steps beyond that program that I was engaged in at the time, I had a different point of view, and I understood that that was merely a stepping stone into another program. And so, to the extent possible, in education, professionally, or otherwise, I would encourage people to sort of start thinking about those 2 to 5 steps ahead just all the time in everything that you do, because reverse engineering that, it will greatly influence the way that you choose to direct your resources, your time, your money, et cetera, in the present.
That's great. And I love this, the Grad Cafe I hadn't heard of before. I'll add that in the resource sections of the show notes. I'm wondering, what other resources would you recommend to veteran listeners that have helped you in your own career and in your own post-military life? It could be books, podcasts, movies, websites, anything that you thought added value for you and might help out listeners too.
Yeah, there's a really, really great book from the 1950s. It's called The Wisdom of Insecurity. And
this is Alan Watts, right?
Yeah.
I just started reading this book. Okay, that's a great endorsement. Yeah, give the pitch on this. Yeah. This is great. Yep.
Yeah, so the short version that I would say is my big takeaway is just to sort of don't get too wrapped up in sort of the accomplishments and the material things and be present. I think that I really struggle with being present because I'm trying to sort of move the ball forward in 4 or 5 endeavors at the same time. But by sort of taking the time to be present in conversations, to focus on the task at hand. There are even sort of some software tools out there to help you do this. But by always focusing on what it is that you have in front of you, not only do you build more positive relationships with the folks you're interacting with, but it also feels like your efforts are compounded and there are a lot fewer distractions in life. And it's also a value statement as well is, you know, if you're interacting with folks and always on your phone or if you're rewriting your resume and always on your phone or always on Facebook or something like that, it really detracts from a lot of these valuable parts of your life. And there are social, there are monetary, there are just individual and group impacts. And so I guess the big takeaway from that would be, really understand what's valuable to you and be present in all things.
I wholeheartedly endorse that. And another book, I actually just gave a summary of this, but a book called Deep Work makes an argument on the professional side of how damaging it is to be multitasking and constantly distracting yourself. And exactly, you know, I think what you said applies to life in general, and then specifically with work, with deep work, of just being able to focus on one thing and not constantly be checking emails and Facebook and always thinking of something else rather than just being present and enjoying the moment. And Jared, you mentioned some software tools. What are some of those that you would recommend or throw out there for people to look at?
Yeah, so I think that, I don't know if you've come across just the idea of a Kanban board, but a Kanban board is something that's really highly adopted in sort of a software engineering world. And the idea behind a Kanban board is that you have lists of projects that you're going to do next week or this week or tomorrow, or you have projects that you're doing right now. And the entire idea is that you limit the number of projects that you're working on in the moment so that you can focus on them. And so there are many Kanban board tools out there, but a great free one is Trello, like cello, but T-R-E-L-L-O. And there's an app version and you can, it'll cross all your platforms. And like Amazon liked it so much that they have sort of an internal tool. And that's honestly what I use to track all of my productivity, because it allows me to sort of zone in on one thing at a time. I tried to use some of those websites where they'll basically lock out your browser for hours at a time, so you won't be tempted to check your email or your Facebook. And I didn't really find a lot of success with those. So the Kanban board idea would be sort of my main pitch for productivity and focusing on whatever it is that you're doing in the moment.
That's great. That's great. Well, I know we're coming up at the end of our time. I always like to leave the last question open-ended, which is, knowing that you have an audience of veterans and active duty military members, what else would you want them to know? It could be about personal life, professional life. What other advice or final words of wisdom would you have for them?
Yeah, so I think that a couple of things. I think that a lot of times we don't necessarily talk to each other about our successes and failures. I think that my first 4 years in the Marine Corps felt a lot like four more years of high school. And, you know, it never really seemed like a lot of the folks that I talked to really got to know each other on a deeper level. And so the first thing would be encouraging folks to, talk to each other about the highs and lows. You know, we hear this in reference to suicide awareness, especially with veterans. But I think that we should sort of shine the light into those corners of our lives, whether those be professional or educational or otherwise. And as part of that, something that you're going to come across is you're going to come across people who will tell you that it can't be done, or that it's never been done that way, or that it might be foolish for you to try. And I would encourage people to be their own sort of their own myth busters, and identifying where your success is dependent on someone else and reducing that, whether that's leveraging your time to sharpen a new skill, to learn something else. I just always try and sort of reduce my dependencies. And then people will ask you, hey, how did you ever do A, B, or C? And you'll blow them away. And especially professionally, people really value that. I think that one thing, folks, especially in the veteran community, we have a lot of qualifications and we've done a lot of things. And sometimes that can be scary. Sometimes it can feel ambiguous, and all of a sudden I don't know what way to brand myself. And I would just encourage people to sort of get out there as much as they can and talk to people outside of your current circle in order to determine sort of how it is that you're going to want to talk about your past. And honestly, like, not necessarily in a spiritual way, but it's a really cathartic experience to talk through what it is that you've been through in your time in the military and understand sort of what that means to you and what that should mean to other people, and how you're going to work through that going forward. And the last thing would be, one of my brothers told me this about 5 years ago, and I've done it ever since. That's, you know, celebrate the small things in your life. I think that, sometimes when you're a young man or woman in the military, celebration looks like getting drunk on a Friday night. But as you get a little bit older and you move into other areas of life, intentionally sort of celebrating the small wins, you know, you get a job, you redo your resume, you get into a program, you meet new friends, sort of intentionally taking time to reflect on the good things in your life can sort of help ease not only the transition process and any period of change in your life, whether that's looking for a new job or sort of coming out of a relationship, coming out of potentially, leaving another organization. There's just a lot of power in taking time to reflect on the positives in your life as they occur and not just blowing through them like a stop sign.
Yeah, I love that. I think one thing I'm trying to actively build more into my life now is just a practice of gratitude and just seeing all the evidence how it's so difficult to maintain feelings of anxiety or fear or depression or sadness when you're simultaneously showing an attitude of gratitude. And what I love about that last thing that you said was just, building that muscle, just like anything else, building it through repetition of finding the small things to appreciate, like a drive on the way to work, or I love the examples you gave. You redid your resume, you moved the ball forward on some sort of interview, you reached out to 10 people for a coffee chat, and regardless of who you hear back from, just celebrating those steps and those little victories. I think that's such a valuable life skill. And I like the other things you said as well. Like earlier, when you talked about being present, I think is so valuable. And in establishing those deeper connections of being vulnerable about where you're succeeding and failing, I think that will that is such an effective way to build stronger bonds with people and learn from them and establish deeper relationships. And yeah, I think all three of those things you said are just really spot on.
Yeah, there's a. I think that we're all learning all the time, and we can learn a lot from each other. I've certainly learned a lot listening to the many sort of podcasts that have come before this one that you've created, Justin, and they're pretty awesome. And I take something really valuable away from each one.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your sharing your story and your example. And I don't know how you juggle one of the most competitive places to work along with one of the most competitive academic programs you could go after, and just all of this. But I love that example of growth and just continuously learning and challenging yourself. I think it's a great example for the veteran community.
Yeah, well, you don't necessarily have to. I think that one of the first things I heard in grad school was get used to B's instead of A's. And I had a knee-jerk reaction to that. But you know what? I'm pretty okay with high B's now, and just solving really cool problems with cool people for a cool company. So you just got to decide what trade-offs you're willing to live with in your life, and divide and conquer.
That's awesome. Well, for listeners, I know we talked about, or Jared mentioned a lot of different resources and books. Those will all be available on the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io. And Jared is in Seattle, Washington. You will see him at Amazon. You'll see him in his PhD program. He will soon be Dr. Jared Weimer. And yeah, I appreciate your time on this, Jared.
Yeah, you too, Justin. Thank you.
Surface, surface, surface.
All right, folks, that's all for this week. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Jared. A couple quick admin notes. He did talk about Service to School. It's a great organization, free for all veterans. If you're thinking of applying to undergrad, grad school, whatever program, they can help you get there. So check them out at servicetoschool.org. Second of all, check out the Audible free trial at beyondtheuniform.io/books. Not only will you find every book we've ever talked about on the show, but you'll get a free copy of an Audible book of your choosing. So thank you very much and have a great week, and I will see you next week. We are getting close to episode number 100 on Beyond the Uniform.